This is the OTB Television Network, a service of Capital District Off-Track Betting.
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America live on this Saturday morning from the Albany studio. Our first time back here since before Saratoga. We took the week off right after Saratoga. Last week we were up at Woodbine, so the first Racing Across America in the studio since before our trek up the Northway. Happy to be here. Fun show coming up this morning. We'll talk a little bit, obviously, Pennsylvania Derby down at Parks and more. Tim Wilkin from the Times Union, been part of the notes team down at Parks over the past week. We'll plug him in a few minutes. Dave Rodman from Laurel will also join us towards the end of the program. They have a big day down there, highlighted by the DeFrancis Memorial, but also the Salima and the Laurel Futurity on a nice stakes card down at Laurel, so we'll talk about that. But with the Pennsylvania Derby and essentially the last three-year-old restricted race, he hit the Malibu at the end of the year, but the last three-year-old restricted race of the year, I thought a great time to bring our friend Jeremy Plonk back into the mix. Obviously, during the beginning of the year, we're talking a lot countdown to the crown and the three-year-olds, but since we're back in the studio now, I thought we'd kind of review what happened on the three-year-old scene in the summertime and talk the Pennsylvania Derby with Jeremy Plonk. Jeremy, good morning.
Hey, and you get a Pennsylvania bred, too, on top of that. You know, it's a big day in the Mid-Atlantic. We're kind of quiet in this part of the country after the Preakness, but you've got the Charlestown Oaks today. You've got the Parks, huge Pennsylvania Derby card, the DeFrancis Dash and everything going on at Laurel. All of a sudden, the Mid-Atlantic is the epicenter of horse racing in America today, and pretty cool for a person who grew up in this area and really went to all three of those tracks growing up. Huge day in And a lot of dollars and attention heading our way this week.
Yeah, looking forward to a good Saturday afternoon. I'll be on later with OTB Live as well, looking at these races as the afternoon progresses and looking forward to that. Before we talk some of the three-year-old scene, again, we haven't talked to you since before Saratoga, so just fill us in. Horseplayernow.com, countdown to the crown, obviously the beginning of the season, but night school, that took a little summer break, night school, but you're back now, and I was looking at the upcoming schedule. It looks like the next night school, I like this, small meet handicapping.
Yeah, and you know, we're talking about some of these Mid-Atlantic tracks today that aren't necessarily small meets. Charlestown might fit into that category, but certainly off-Broadway. You know, we get so used to gambling on the big racetracks. You know, it used to be you got into horse racing playing your regional track, your local racetrack. But since simulcasting and this sport became so national and things like you're doing with a local show in Albany that goes national and worldwide on the internet, that you could become a racing fan and the first thing you do is bet the NYRA circuit, you know, and you don't live in New York. So you can go straight to the major leagues. A lot of people then don't cut their teeth on the smaller tracks. I grew up literally going to Charlestown, to Penn National, to the Maryland tracks. And so for me, the smaller tracks were where I got started. And I think small track handicapping, just to give a little tease of what we'll talk about some on the Tuesday night show, premieres every Tuesday, 8:30 Eastern, night school, 20 lessons this year. That's our ninth season of the program. But when I think small track handicapping, you really lessen a lot of the variables. You think about a track like Charlestown. There's no turf racing. There's really only four distances, 4.5, 6.5, 7, and 1 mile and a 16th that they run races at. When you take a lot of those variables out, tracks like that can be a good place to start your handicapping. Speed rules in cheaper racing. We know that with small circuit handicapping. So, again, identifying pace scenarios and horses who can make the front, it makes things a little simpler in your handicapping. Of course, we're always open to chaos when you have lesser quality horses here and there. But I think the handicapping process itself narrows a lot less variables when you play the smaller circuit. So if you're a listener out there who's on the newer side and trying to get your feet wet, maybe betting Saratoga or Belmont can be intimidating to you, but the smaller circuits might be something that you can adapt to quicker and then build your game up to the bigger circuits.
Yeah, I, you know, being in here and doing OTB Live and covering a number of tracks, I appreciate the smaller circuits and the fun they can bring to the game. Just a change up from if you're a regular on some of the bigger circuits, and I think you kind of have to approach it maybe in a different way. I think it hones your handicapping skills because you have to take a different look and come from a different angle. You get in a comfort zone maybe with those tracks you normally handicap. So if you move around and add some tracks in, spice it up a little bit during the year, as I say, I think it improves your handicapping a little bit. I'm also looking down going forward, the night school pick six, trip handicapping, October 15th, I'm tuning in, psychology, because I think that is a big part of the game. Also, handicapping red flags coming up on the 22nd of October and obviously on the 29th, betting the Breeders' Cup. But there's a couple of subjects in there I think we can all jump into and learn something from.
Yeah, and the psychology has come out in a lot of the different lessons this year. In fact, we just talked about the pick threes, fours, fives in a lesson a week ago. And the psychology of horse players nowadays to play those pick threes, pick fours, pick fives, I think a lot of it is we enjoy being successful in our selections. And in those races with the small denominations, you know, 50 cents, maybe 20 cents at Woodbine, the psychology of being alive after a leg or two or three, you feel good hitting three out of four, even if you don't collect the whole pick four. So the psychology of these bets becoming more and more popular, I think, is I can use more horses, I'm alive, I'm moving on. That's not necessarily good to your bottom line, and I'm not saying that's sound handicapping strategy, but it makes you feel better moving along a sequence versus just betting straight up a win bet on a horse every race, where you may go 2 for 10 on a card making win bet. With pick fours and pick fives, you'll see that you're hitting success at 60%. 3 out of 5 on a pick five is hitting 60% of the races. It feels a lot better than losing every time. But at the end of the day, you still got to hit all five. This is why these wagers are difficult. But those kind of psychological things, you got to be careful as a horse player that you're not falling into some of those traps. We talk about that a little bit later in the season at night school. But again, last week's talk about the multi-race wagers, all that psychology stuff kind of plays into it. And after being in this game 35, 40 years as a handicapper now and 25 years as a professional in the industry, you know, I've talked to a lot of people. I've been through a lot of my own personal accounts, and these things are that we pick up along the way. You see, the same people do the same things and make a lot of the same pitfalls. So we try to share those experiences in night school.
And again, those are all coming up. You can check the horseplayernow.com website for the night school schedule. Jeremy, again, before we get to the three-year-olds, we haven't talked to you since before Saratoga. So again, I just wanted to kind of little overview of the summer. Certainly to me, and I was up here at Saratoga, and maybe being live at Saratoga, it was a little bit different. But I think the summer kind of turned the horse racing world around a little bit. The beginning of the season, obviously out in Southern California, and what happened in the Kentucky Derby and whatnot, I think there was a little bit of a dark cloud over the horse racing game. But certainly up at Saratoga, out at Del Mar as well, and I wrote down some of the performances at Saratoga. And I talked about this during the meet because once I walked out of the winner's circle after the Whitney, I said, boy, the first couple of weeks have really shaped up well here at Saratoga. And I think it continued with good horses validating themselves. Midnight Bishu in a late, one of the better races all year long in the personal Ensign. McKinsey in the Whitney. Kafefi in the test, who again, Kafefi goes this afternoon at Churchill. She had mentioned that. Preservationist for Jimmy Jerkins in the Woodward. Matoli coming back in the Forego. Mind Control in the Jerkins. The weekend with Chancelot and Imperial Hint and their sprinting performances. I just thought the summer, as I say, kind of turned things around a little bit. Obviously, the last couple of weeks, maybe things have gone in the other direction a little bit with the New York Times story. But the summer, to me, kind of turned things around. What were your impressions?
Yeah, well, good racing will do that, right? And time does heal all wounds. So as things in this news cycle that we're in, you know, this media world that we live in nowadays, you know, a week or two past, and people seem to be on to the next story. That doesn't solve our problems in horse racing, and what we had at Santa Anita obviously was a major situation throughout the course of the spring and the early part of the winter, and those kind of things need to be rectified and corrected, no question about it. But the intensity of the scrutiny certainly wears off as time goes on a little bit. Santa Anita's about to kick back up in a week or so for their fall meet. We'll see if there's intensity brought back there. But, yeah, I agree with you that things started to feel a little bit better as the summer went on before the bombshell with Drake's story, you know, regarding it Justify. But we can't, you know, relax on these things. You know, they are serious issues in the racing industry that need to be addressed. And good racing makes us feel better from a day-to-day situation. And you can't feel bad going to the track when you see good racing like that, you know. And that is the one good thing that puts a bounce in the step. And it's one of the reasons why, even after 25 years in the industry and 14 years doing Countdown to the Crown, that it's one of the things I really do look forward to, because it is almost a reset button every January that, you know, maybe 2018 wasn't your best year, but 2019 might be. And that look ahead of, you know, a prospect and what the future holds for you is really the allure for me for doing Countdown to the Crown. And it's something that's refreshing and something that, you know, I look forward to continuing in years to come, because like you said, you know, it was a rough time in the spring, but that good racing at Saratoga gave you and many people in the industry, and myself included, a better feel about everything that was going on. And what we saw at Saratoga was great racing. Unfortunately, Mother Nature wasn't a cooperating player, you know, hurting the field size with so many races washed off the surface of the Spa this year. But the stakes racing was absolutely fabulous.
Yeah, and let's get into the three-year-old scene now. We'll talk to Travers in a moment, because that was obviously a big performance also. But let's start with the Haskell, going back to July 20th. Speaking of weather, it was on that day where the heat canceled racing in a lot of places and moved post times back. And I'm looking at the chart here. Post time for the Haskell was actually 8:12 in the p.m. We're going to take a look at the stretch run here. Maximum Security gets it done. And given what happened over the past week with Maximum Security now being scratched out of the Pennsylvania Derby, boy, he has just been one of the most star-crossed runners you could think of over the past few seasons, with the DQ and the Kentucky Derby, the loss in the Pegasus coming into this race, but he does hold off Mucho Gusto and get it done here to put the Grade 1 Haskell on his resume, along with the Grade 1 Florida Derby earlier in the season, and of course the DQ and the Kentucky Derby. But what are your thoughts overall on the performance as we went through the summer for Maximum Security, and subsequently misses the Travers and now misses the Pennsylvania Derby?
Yeah, he is star-crossed in that respect for sure. And you look at the resume, does anybody have two wins better than the Florida Derby and the Haskell on their resume and those two Grade Ones in this division? Otherwise, it's been a pretty much a trade, your turn, my turn kind of three-year-old crop throughout the year. Maximum Security, when you actually look at his past performances, if you look at him today, they're all ones going down the page except second beat in a length in the Pegasus. You know, when he got upset that day by King for a Day, when Jason Service said he really wasn't sure about running him all week, and they went ahead and ran him. The one thing about Jason Service, say what you want, you don't like his percentages, you have your suspicions about, you know, the cleanliness of his operation and things like that. When he spoke about Maximum Security, he's been on, you know. I mean, he thought he had him really good for the Kentucky Derby. He was. He was suspicious about how he would run in that race in the Pegasus. He didn't run his best race. He was back on cue for the Monmouth race. And after the race at Monmouth in the Haskell, you know, there was some uncertainty where he would go next, what race he would be able to make it for. And Jason's passed on the last two, you know, no Travers now, no Pennsylvania Derby. Will he ever run again? We don't know. You know, it's hard to say. They say a four-year-old campaign is scheduled. The Pegasus World Cup would make a lot of sense for him. The success he had last winter at Gulfstream, how he got good in his form cycle over the winter. He obviously is a horse who, you know, has some physical issues. He has since birth, probably, given the fact that, you know, he wasn't a high-dollar horse. He was debuted for $16,000 for a reason in the bottom end of the maiden claiming rank. You know, there are reasons why his races haven't been able to be laid on top of each other. And so Maximum Security, waiting for a race like the Pegasus World Cup at the end of January, maybe with a little prep somewhere in between, that would seem to make a lot of sense. And hopefully we see him again. You know, I think he's a really talented horse. He's obviously got his detractors and people who are skeptical of the whole situation with the lawsuits afterwards. Luis Saez has got his, you know, proponents and opponents with his aggressive riding style. So he is good for the game in that he is a lightning rod. You know, you're either kind of for him or against him. And in any sport, that's good. You know, you need the New England Patriots in the NFL that have their loyal legion of fans that also have people who kind of come out to root against them. I don't think that's necessarily bad in sports. And so, you know, maximum security of the horse, he knows none of that. You know, he's a four-legged animal who gets up in the morning and eats hay and goes out and does his thing and enjoys jogging. You know, all the other stuff we put on the humans and those that surround them, and we try to make these out to be storylines. But he's good for racing in that respect, I think, and I hope he runs as a four-year-old. He's very talented. To me, no one's done more so far in the three-year-old ranks this year.
Yeah, as you say, you look down the page, and other than the Pegasus, it's all ones. But, of course, there was the DQ in the Kentucky Derby. But, as I say, kind of star-crossed. And because of that, I think the door opened up after the Travers, potentially, as far as the Eclipse Award is concerned. I'll get your opinion, but we'll watch the stretch run here. It's going to be number two, Code of Honor, over Tacitus, Mucho Gusto third, Endorsed fourth, Owendale fifth. So a nice strong field of 12 in the Travers. And Code of Honor finally gets it done in a grade one, had won the grade three Dwyer nicely before this. Shug then holds off until the Travers, so a nice layoff, but comes in and gets it done, puts this grade one on the resume. Next week faces Older in the grade one jockey club, and you have to think if he wins that, he is seriously in the discussion. Again, given the situation with Maximum Security having missed this Travers and now having missed the Pennsylvania Derby. What are your thoughts on Code of Honor?
Yeah, he's the one. He's the three-year-old who can upend everything in terms of the championship because he's got the one signature win in the Travers. That's the biggie, you know? I mean, that's a major at the grade one level. When we talk Maximum Security, we say Florida Derby Haskell, two very, very good top-end grade one. Somebody else has got to get that second major grade one. World Will, maybe the Preakness winner, goes in the Pennsylvania Derby at Park. He can possibly get into that discussion. I mean, does Preakness Pennsylvania Derby trump Florida Derby Haskell? And that's like taking, like, do we ignore what happened in the Kentucky Derby with Maximum Security, the racehorse? And do we blame the jockey? Do we blame the connections? Do we blame the stewards? You know, when it comes to voting, that's really, I'm not sure. Will people treat the Kentucky Derby as a first-place finish for Maximum Security in their estimation of the horse, or will they consider it to be a 16th place finish wherever he was placed, you know, out of the money officially? That'll be very interesting. But somebody else has to win another big race. Code of Honor is certainly the horse that could do that. And winning against older horses would be the feather in the cap that Maximum Security does not have. So I think just a win in the Jockey Club Gold Cup could make Code of Honor the champion three-year-old. And let's be honest, people matter. Likeability matters. These are humans voting on things. The Shug McGahee and the Jannies and people involved with the horses involved with the ownership of Code of Honor. I mean, you know, people love Shug and they dislike Jason Service for the most part, and that's just being a handicapper of the people, you know, of the voters out there. And I think some will hold that against them. And so I think Code of Honor has the leg up with another grade one win to supplant Maximum Security as the champion three-year-old. I'm not saying it's right or it's wrong. That's the way I handicap the human horse race here. I think people will lean towards Code of Honor if he gets another grade one, and maybe deservedly so, too. I mean, you add that element of beating older horses. It's not the greatest group of older horses for the Jockey Club Gold Cup. And when we get to the Breeders' Cup Classic, look, Code of Honor could be the favorite for the Breeders' Cup Classic. He's not far off from that now. The way the division's starting to fall apart, I mean, outside of McKenzie, Code of Honor's probably the second favorite maybe right now for the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting. You brought up a topic. I talked with your colleague Brian Addo on the handicapping show a little bit earlier, and I mentioned if it comes down to a close vote, I think it'll be interesting the psychology of voters and what they do with the Kentucky Derby. Do they say, you know, essentially he won that, and look at all the ones on the page, and do they kind of give that to Maximum? It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out as the year progresses as far as Code of Honor next week. And War of Will, you mentioned, and I kind of agree, a win this afternoon probably puts him in the mix as well with the Preakness and the Pennsylvania Derby. And let's shift our attention to the Pennsylvania Derby and get some of your thoughts. And I'll tell the guys in the control room, you can kind of go these replays back to back, because I wanted to show both Improbable and Mr. Money. And first up, we'll look at Improbable winning the shared belief. And Improbable here will be the number six horse. Short field of only four. Gets it done, though, the way you would want. A couple of lengths is the favorite. And then we'll watch the West Virginia Derby. And number nine, Mr. Money, will win that one. I put Improbable on top here. Bob Baffert coming east. I almost put War of Will on top. And I'm taking, I guess, a little bit of a stand against Mr. Money, who has to prove it in this kind of company. But what are your thoughts on this afternoon's Pennsylvania Derby?
So we're in agreement there. I think it's one of the horses that went through the Triple Crown Series and that we're more familiar with as the plays on Saturday. It's Improbable or War of Will to me. Improbable had his best race probably in some time, maybe of the year, going back to last year's Low South Security, in winning that race with Del Mar. And I think that he's probably a horse on his best day would be a Pennsylvania Derby winner in Baffert's mold. You see, Baffert's won this race three times in recent years. This horse just kind of fits that bill. War of Will's training exceptionally well, and I think he's going to be the value play in this race. The lack of value certainly is going to fall with the, I guess, ironically named Mr. Money, because I think he's going to take too much money in the Pennsylvania Derby off these races against subpar fields. It was a weak renewal of the West Virginia Derby in behind him, the races prior. He's taken that money route. You know, it's been a good path over the years for second-tier three-year-olds to go through, you know, the Indianas, the Iowas, the Oklahomas, the West Virginias, and bag all that money in those $300,000, $400,000, $700,000 kind of dollar races. But those horses generally, I mean, you go back and look through history, those horses generally, departing in like 2013, had one of the greatest runs through those kind of races you ever see. They never got to the next level. They were always a grade two, grade three kind of horse. Those kind of horses rarely make that big leap forward and become the elite three-year-old. Now, do you have to be an elite three-year-old to beat Improbable and War of Will on a neutral field at Park? Maybe you don't have to be a great horse to do that, but I think you're going to want more price on the tote board than you're going to get on Mr. Money. To me, he's like a 5-to-1 shot or so to beat those horses, maybe even a little bit more. 5-6-to-1 to me would be about fair odds if you're going to beat Baffert in the Preakness winner on a neutral field. And I don't think you're going to get anywhere near that. I think he's going to be 5-to-2, you know, 3-to-1 max on Mr. Money. So I think he's the toss on this afternoon. I would be against Mr. Money. War of Will is one of those horses who really has tipped his hand over. When he's in really good form, you kind of know it. He's running really well. When he's in bad form, he's not training well. He's worked exceptionally coming up to the Pennsylvania Derby. I think he's back. Mark's got him right again. He's a horse who obviously has had trouble staying right. But I think Mark's got him right now, and this is a really good placement and a really good timing. They didn't go to the Travers. Horses from Saratoga and the Travers have dominated the Pennsylvania Derby in recent years. None of the Travers alumni showed up. I think it was 6 of the last 7 years a Travers horse has won the Pennsylvania Derby. None of them even showed up in this year's race. So they thumb their nose at history, the kind of things I like to look at. But you look at a horse like War of Will coming out of the Saratoga meet, the Jim Dandy, skips the Travers. You know, he might be in their profile and timing-wise and certainly class of competition that he's run against to fit very well. I think War of Will is the play. I think he's going to be a fairly distant third choice on the tote board. I think he could be in that 5-to-1, 6-to-1 range as the heavy money comes in on Improbable and more money than it should comes on Mr. Money. That all benefits people who are back in War of Will, and I think he's the value play today.
Yeah, as I say, I almost put him on top. Those last four workouts just jump off the page, and I do kind of indicate Mark Cassie has him back in good form. And Mr. Money, I will say, you know, Mr. Money, and I can't disagree, folks have over the last few races been saying, come on, try the bigger competition. But you look at the money, he's got $1 million in the bank. So maybe these races won't get him an Eclipse Award, but got him $1 million. So I can't knock him.
Brilliantly. Yeah. This has been an absolutely fantastic campaign. And this is the right race, too. It's the last race for strictly three-year-olds. It's a mile and an eighth. You don't have to extend, you know, any further. He's by Golden Sense, right? We don't think he's probably a mile and a quarter horse. So the bottom of the pedigree could get him some more stamina. So you get a mile and an eighth, a short field, $1 million. Beautifully campaigned throughout the year. This is the right natural place after you win the Matt Wynn, the Indiana Derby, the West Virginia Derby. Showing up here at Park, perfect spot, 122 pounds. He doesn't have to carry a classic weight in this kind of race. Really smartly campaigned, no doubt about it. And I just think he's going to be an underlay. If he was 5 or 6 to 1, he's probably the bet. I think it's the flip-flop, though. I think the 5 or 6 to 1 shot could end up being War of Will.
Yeah, we talked about the three. After the scratch of Maximum Security, it's only a field of six. But the three that we talked about certainly make it a fun addition to the Pennsylvania Derby. Jeremy, speaking of fun, had fun with the conversation this morning, catching up on the three-year-old scene as it played out through the summer into this afternoon's Pennsylvania Derby. Again, tell people to swing by horseplayernow.com. Check out the Knight School upcoming season, or the continuing of the season as it'll play out this next edition, small meet handicapping, and then a lot of great topics coming up in the weeks going forward. Appreciate the visit. We'll talk again.
Anytime, Steph. Take care, everybody.
Jeremy Plonk, horseplayernow.com, and much, much more. We'll take a break when we come back. Our friend Tim Wilkin, he's been live on the ground down at Parks this past week. We'll catch up with the info from the backstretch down there and more right after this. Stay tuned. Here's some exciting news if you like Twilight Racing. Weekdays during the 2019 Belmont Fall Meet, NYRA has moved back their racing schedule by 2 hours, making the new post time at Belmont 3 p.m. So remember, weekdays at Belmont, the new post time is 3 p.m.
Find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Now it's a global series. The best racers from all over the world, the best trainers, the best jockeys.
You can get a free entry into the Breeders' Cup, and everybody wants to run in a Breeders' Cup race.
You get your travel expenses paid for the Breeders' Cup.
Automatic berth takes a lot of pressure off.
If we're considering two different races, and one was a win and you're in and one was not, that would be the tiebreaker.
It's probably the best thing that's happened to racing in the last 10 years.
Breeders' Cup Challenge, win and you're in.
Union, been live down at Parks over the past week or so, kind of part of the notes team down there, putting out press information on the Pennsylvania Derby, the Cotillion and more. Tim, good morning.
Hey, Seth. How's everything up there?
Very good. Haven't talked to you since the end of the Saratoga meet, where I saw you virtually every day, all day, yeah. As it were, as you were the last out of the press box normally. And given that I haven't talked to you since Saratoga, I have to start out the conversation by tipping my cap and giving you congratulations. It was a few days after the meet. National Turf Writers and Broadcasters Group announced their year-end awards, which will be handed out Breeders' Cup weekend. And I think we have the headline here among the award winners, Rick Violette, Wayne Lucas, Caton Bradar, and Tim Wilkin pulls up the Walter Haight Award for Career Excellence. And I smiled when I saw that. As I say, I'm up in the press box, and we have you on the backstretch every year, and we talk about your Saratoga day, which starts early and ends very late. And a couple of years ago, you were hobbling around the whole meet with a bad knee that you eventually had surgery on, but you still persevered. And so, excuse me, very happy for you that you're getting the Career Excellence Award, but I'd love to get your reaction when that was announced.
Well, gosh, I mean, well, thanks for all that. I mean, you make me sound like a war hero. Certainly not that, but no, I was humbled and honored to be, you know, just getting that award from the National Turf Writers. I mean, it's a very select group. I mean, Red Smith won it. I mean, that's all you need to know right there. I mean, it goes back to 1972, and, you know, it also might mean that I've just been around for a long time, too.
As I say, you do a great job up at Saratoga covering horse racing, and you pop around to the other venues as well. And this week, down at Parks. So talk a little bit about your experience down at Parks so far.
Yeah, this is the second year I've done this, working for the notes team at Parks here in Ben Salem, Pennsylvania, just outside of Philadelphia. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever been here. It used to be old Philadelphia Park, Keystone. And they do a really nice job here. Everyone is just so friendly. You know, it's a great little place. I mean, the casino's right next door. They're expecting a crowd of maybe upwards of 10,000, which would have been more maybe if, for sure would have been more if maximum security had stayed in the Pennsylvania Derby, but obviously he pulled out on Tuesday. But it's still a good card. There's 13 races. And, you know, highlighted by the two big ones, the Cotillion and Pennsylvania Derby. And also they got the Grade 2, Galen Bob, and Jerry Hollendorfer is actually here for that one, with King Jack, who was thinking about running in the Alan Jerkins before staying home after Omaha Beach, decided not to run in the Shared Belief, and King Jack finished second to Improbable, who's going to be the morning line favorite here in the Pennsylvania Derby.
And you're down there, we were talking before we went on the air, Tom Law and Anthony Affronti also down there as part of the notes team.
We're doing the stuff that, you know, I'm on the other side of the coin, so to speak, because, you know, usually I'm doing, you know, my own thing, but now I'm doing stuff that people can use. And it is kind of a different deal because I'm still doing the same stuff that I would do normally for the Times Union, using all my contacts and stuff like that. And it's, but now everyone else can use stuff that I that I got. It's kind of a different feeling because, you know, normally I'm just, if I talk to Bob Baffert, it's just for me. But now I'm talking to him and it's for everybody.
Yeah, and if people don't know the mechanics, normally, as you say, you're writing for the Times Union, and so you put an article together and it shows up under your byline in the Times Union. But notes, and we get them at Saratoga every day. The Saratoga press office hands out, the Naira press office hands out notes, which anybody can pull quotes from those and put them in their articles, in their publications. So that's the side of the coin you're on down at Parks.
Yeah, it's different because, you know, when I'm talking to some of these guys, normally I think, well, maybe I should keep the good stuff for myself. But I said, well, I don't need this stuff for myself because I'm not writing anything for the daily stuff until, I mean, I'm going to cover the Pennsylvania Derby and the Cotillion for the Times Union for tomorrow. But, you know, you're working for the racetrack now, and it's a whole different mentality. And it's supposed to get you more better access. I don't know if I've seen that yet, but down here, it's not like you're at Churchill Downs either. It's a pretty laid-back place. And, you know, this is their big day. This is their big day to shine.
Yeah, I mean,
they pull out all the stops.
A couple of grade ones and potentially playing into Eclipse Awards, you would have to think. And so it is a very big day out there. Pennsylvania Derby, Cotillion, and another slew of stakes underneath. Talk a little bit about... it's a beautiful day here in the Capital District. I'm assuming a nice day planned for this afternoon at Parks as well?
Yes, it's supposed to get hot, though. They say the last forecast I saw, they were predicting a high of 87.
Ah.
I mean, it could be feel like a steamy day at Saratoga. I don't know what the humidity is supposed to be like, but they are saying it's going to be hot. It was funny because I was talking to Mark Cassidy this week, who has War of Will running in the Pennsylvania Derby. And he said, I'm looking forward to getting down there when it'll be cooler weather. but no, yeah, because War of Will, he actually is probably here now. He's got to be here now. He shipped out of Belmont at 5 o'clock this morning. He's the last Pennsylvania Derby horse to arrive here. Because down here, you don't have to be on the ground Wednesday before like you do in New York for these big races.
Yeah, and we'll hit on, you have some nice video of some of the horses on the track over the past couple of days. We'll hit on that in a second. But first, just update us, because you have been down there for a while. Update us on the situation with maximum security, because, again, folks who have the PPs printed up, maximum security is there. But pretty much as soon as the PPs were printed, he was announced as having been scratched. So update us on maximum security.
Well, you know, on Monday, he, you know, because Jason Service, I mean, maybe it's an unorthodox way of doing it, but his last two works were here at Parks, but then he would ship the horse back to his base at Monmouth. And after he worked here on Monday, he put him back on the van to go back to Monmouth and put him back in his stall. And later that afternoon, Jason got a call from someone at the barn saying something was wrong with the horse. So Jason went back to the place and went back to the barn, and indeed something was wrong. And they took him to a clinic where he had a colon entrapment. And it was, Jason told me that Monday afternoon at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the horse was in critical condition. But he was treated. He was treated with everything in the clinic that they could do. They did not have to perform surgery, and which was a shock to me. The next day, the horse was back in his barn at Monmouth. I mean, obviously, he's not running here, and I don't know when and if he's going to run again this year. But, you know, they're also talking about the possibility of maybe running him as a four-year-old and gearing up to run in the Pegasus of Gulfstream. But it's just a... It almost maybe sounds fitting that, you know, this has been such a wacky year with everything happening with the three-year-old pitcher in particular. You know, you go back to the Derby and the DQ and, you know, Bodie Meister throwing Johnny V in the Preakness. It's just been a nutty year for the three-year-olds. And it continues as we head into this because this was going to be the first time that Maximum Security faced War Will since the Derby, and those were the two main, players in the DQ. And it would have been, and you know, NBC's here, and that was going to be a huge storyline for them. I mean, the race has certainly lost some of its luster because of that, but you know, it's still a pretty good horse race. There's some good horses left that are going to, you know, of the six that are going to line up to run.
Yeah, I talked to Jeremy Plonk just before we had you on, and we were looking at the race, and Improbable, War of Will, Mr. Money, they're the three, and they make the race, I think, very interesting. Certainly War of Will with another grade one win could jump into the Eclipse picture. Improbable sure. For Baffert, Mr. Money off of that series of races this summer that were kind of the second tier, but he has a million in the bank right now. And I went to your Twitter feed. We have a couple of pieces of video that you have from the track the last couple of days. First up, we'll look at Mr. Money yesterday on the track, just out after the gallop, and Improbable galloping on Thursday. That'll come up next. But just give me your thoughts of the field in the Pennsylvania Derby, which direction you're going to tilt, and if you came away the last few mornings with any information.
Well, you know, the thing with Improbable is, you know, he won the Shared Belief. He beat King Jack, but he didn't really beat much in that race. And it was his first race since the Preakness. And then the Preakness and the Derby, he ended up going off the favorite in both those races in the Derby just by a couple $100s. But the problem with Improbable is that we don't know what he's going to do before the race. He's always, in the Preakness, he lost all chance because he acted up in the gate. You know, Bob Baffert has said that, you know, he doesn't know why he does it, because every time they take him in to school him in the morning, he used the term puppy dog. He's like a puppy dog. He does whatever they ask him to do. But then, you know, because maybe it's the crowd and everything else looking around when they go into the gate in the afternoon, he just gets a little goofy. And if that happens today, if he doesn't get – the break is the key for Improbable. If he doesn't break, he's not going to win. And Bob and Mark Cassie both are very, very concerned about Mr. Money. I mean, some people have said, well, he hasn't, you know, faced the upper echelon of three-year-olds. Yeah, he hasn't, but all he's done is win. I mean, he's won his last four, all of them grade threes, grade three races, I believe. You know, he's turned into a serious horse. I mean, he's a horse that could jump up and, you know, if he were to win this race, he's not gonna be, you know, the horse people can say, oh, there's your three-year-old champion. He'd still have work to do, but it would be a step in the right direction. And as far as War of Will, you know, he's sort of been forgotten since his last two races have been dud. I mean, in the Jim Dandy, he went to the lead, which he doesn't normally do, and he was cooked after that. Didn't run a step really in the Belmont, and Mark Cassie told me he thinks it's because of he didn't like the track at Belmont Park. So, you know, he's got a lot to prove, but Mark also thinks that because he's got some time now between this race, between the Jim Dandy and this one, you know, it's going to help him, because after the Louisiana Derby debacle, he had time off between the Derby, and he went big in the Derby, so, you know, we know what happened there. Then came back to win the Preakness. I mean, I'm going to take a sniff at War Will because of, I think I'll get a good price on it.
Yeah, and the string of workouts underneath just seems to indicate
that he's working lights out.
So I couldn't ignore those. I almost put him on top. I tilted towards improbable. But the more I'm looking this morning, I'm thinking, yeah, War Will. And certainly if the morning line holds up at 4-1, War Will kind of becomes the direction. Let's shift our attention now to the Cotillion. Again, have a little video that you posted. Bella Fina galloping yesterday, Friday. Boy, she, the last couple of races, she just, the Kentucky Oaks and the test where she ran third behind Covfefe and Serengeti Empress, it leaves you questioning her. But earlier in the career, there was plenty of talent from Bella Fina. I had to tilt towards Garana, obviously. And then I put Serengeti Empress right underneath. She has been just so gutsy in the last two, the Acorn, and certainly that test with Covfefe, who again runs this afternoon over at Churchill Downs. But it looks like Garana, as I say, these races this afternoon may have some eclipse potential, and you would think Garana would sew up a three-year-old filly eclipse with a win this afternoon in the Cotillion.
You would think. I mean, back to Bella Fina, you know, she looks the part, but she just can't win outside of California.
Yeah.
All six of her races, all six of her wins have come in California. Every time she's ventured out for four races, she's lost. Read into that what you will. I mean, she's obviously a player. She'll have blinkers on for this race. I think she's going to be part of it, but I also think Serengeti Empress has a huge, will have a huge say in what happens here. I loved her in the test when she just got beat by Covfefe, and I'm not going to get off her bandwagon here. And yes, Chad Brown's filly is just, you know, she's the one to beat, but I'm just going to take a shot against her. She's facing some really, really salty fillies in this race. And Sweet Pan, there's another one who was third in the Alabama, who looked great down here. I think it could be a player. It should be a speed race, and, you know, Serengeti Empress is going to make Garana work. And I think if that happens, who knows what could happen at the end. I just think it's a very good race to bet, and I wouldn't discount any of the closers. I love Serengeti Empress's heart.
I agree that it's a fun race. $1 million up for grabs in a field of 11, and there are probably five or six that you can make fairly similar arguments for the same level of confidence. Tim, got to go, but appreciate the visit. Certainly have enjoyed getting the notes from you and the team down there. Say hello to Tom and Anthony. Oh, also, if you run into Keith Jones, he used to be a regular with us when we had the weekday show. Haven't talked to him in a while, though, but say hello to Keith Jones if you happen to run into him. And before I let you go, just one more time, congratulations on the award from the New York Turf Writer, for the National Turf Writers.
Seth, I appreciate that. I appreciate your kind words on that. And, it's a humbling honor to get for sure. And I'm looking forward to it.
And again, the awards dinner, Breeders' Cup weekend out in Southern California. Tim, appreciate the visit. We'll talk again.
Thanks, Seth.
Tim Wilkin, Times Union, but this week part of the notes team down at Parks covering the Pennsylvania Derby, the Cotillion, and more. We will shift our attention to Maryland, a nice day of stakes racing at Laurel this afternoon. Dave Rodman will jump into that next. Stay tuned.
Belmont Stakes. Here comes High Jump. Here's some exciting news from Capital OTB. Capital Off-Track Betting and the Rivers Casino have partnered to bring you the finest experience in wagering on all your favorite thoroughbred and harness tracks from right inside the casino. Our newest location is open daily and can be found at Vance Flicks Bar, offering live tellers, self-serve betting terminals, racing information kiosks, and all the amenities you've come to expect from Capital OTB. See you at the Rivers Casino in Schenectady.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, joined by our friend Dave Rodman from Laurel with a big stakes day down there. We'll hit on some of those. Dave, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Seth. It's just a great day here at Laurel. I mean, all these stakes into one. The weather's perfect, and we're going to have a huge, huge day. And happy to see the Salima back at a mile and a 16th and the Laurel Futurity. You know, just a great, great day of action. The Laurel Futurity, the Bald Eagle Derby, Baltimore Washington International, the Dash, those are two graded races. And Laurel Dash, the Sensible Lady, and the Weather Vane Stakes. And I think I've covered them all.
Yeah, looking forward to it. A nice stakes day. We'll be showing those on the channel later, and I'll be looking at them as we go through the OTB Live program with cut-ins throughout the afternoon, but I wanted some of your opinions as well. Before we do that, the candy capping show yesterday afternoon, Laurel was on, and you had me laughing with Guilty, Not Guilty, the stretch run there.
Yeah, it just happened to turn out that way. It's like the bait cap, stay cap, stay cap, bait cap. And we had two Lunas the other day. We had two Luna named horses. For some reason, we've been getting a lot of those today.
And it played out well with the stretch run ding dong, so you could, guilty, not guilty, guilty. Not, I laughed.
Yeah, I wouldn't have done it if it was drawing away winner, for sure. That's a nice little horse there.
No, yeah, absolutely. All right, let's jump in and kind of work our way around the card here. But the DeFrancis Memorial, grade three event, $250,000, six furlongs, the trip, and it's a fun field. Old-time Revival can toss in a big race whenever. Spartacle comes off a nice win and a claim last time from Penn National, but with a triple-digit buyer. I went back to the Tail of the Cat up here at Saratoga back on August 9th. The number 7, Bon Raisin, is going to be the winner. Number 4, He Hate Me, will run second. They're both in this afternoon in the DeFrancis. What are your thoughts on the big race?
Yeah, Bon Raisin's in good form right now. He's a closer, should get plenty of speed, and he's going to knock heads against a horse that he beat, and he beat him. He Hate Me from Sagamore Farm. And I guess I'm going to lean in that direction here. Local connections, of course, Algorithm Skelding. He's been very, very, very consistent. He's got enough tactical early speed to sit off the pace if necessary, and he just may do that just off of it while showing good tactical early speed there under Manny Franco. I'm going to give him an ever-so-slight edge in the DeFrancis Dash. And so they meet again, Bon Raisin, He Hate Me, and I think it's 1-1 the score now on their meeting.
Yeah, He Hate Me hasn't been back on track since that Tail of the Cat. Bon Raisin, on the other hand, fifth in the four-go and then went to Parks and ran second in the Ben Salem. But He Hate Me, they went to the sidelines, has been over at Churchill. Nice little bullet workout on September 6th, so wouldn't surprise me to see him run.
New York Central's got 100 buyer number, that Maryland sprint, a Preakness weekend there. Good effort at Pimlico. You know, can he recreate that effort here at Laurel Park after a little bit of time away and freshening for the Asmussen barn. And Altissimo, a 16-time winner, very interesting horse indeed. He's got a lot of early foot, and I like the fact that they ship him everywhere to run. Belterra, Thistle Down, Mahoning Valley. Here at Laurel, he was second in the Dave's Friend to Colonel Sharp in a real, real solid effort. It looked like he was actually beat on the turn. I mean, he was dropping back, almost gave him the not firing call, if I recall. It's a long time ago, but very surprised when he came back, and then he was involved in a photo in that race, and he reeled off 3 in a row. Ohio bred have been, will travel. It's been everywhere.
Yeah, and the Ohio bred label was what made me. I wasn't quite sure what to do, but plenty of early speed. Three triple-digit buyers showing on the page. So Altissimo, I agree, very interesting at a 61
he's
going to
be. He's
going
to be. These pace are part of the pace, no doubt. I think they're going to try to go. And he hates me. Hopefully, we'll sit off of him. Spartacle's going to flash that speed. Though a former claimer, he's a very quick horse. And then you've got, like you mentioned, Old Time Revival looking to live up to the old times. He's pulled some upsets in the past. I mean, he's kind of the dark speed horse in here who could hang around for a share from the Kenny Decker barn.
All right, let's go a little earlier on the card, the Salima for the two-year-old fillies. I love the three-year-old turf division, subdivision. Three-year-olds on turf, three-year-old fillies on turf. But these two-year-old turf races play into that when the calendar changes, so I'm always intrigued to see how these will play out. The Salima, mile and a 16th on the grass for a couple hundred thousand dollars. And, Dave, I pulled up a maiden special from Colonial Downs on August 29th. The winner here will be number two, Love Beach. The buyer number doesn't necessarily jump off the page, but I think it matches well with the rest of this group. But what intrigues me was a couple of weeks ago on your kind of reopening day for this fall-winter season, I was doing the Friday card and noted that horses from Colonial seemed to do very well. And I said, maybe we'll watch them. And that opening weekend, the Colonial runners seemed to validate my thoughts. And so this one coming in off the win at Colonial attracts my attention. So I'm going to take a look at Love Beach. But what are your thoughts on the Salima?
Yeah, that's a strong point. For some reason, that turf course gets them nice and fit, gives them a leg up. I mean, they come out of those races, and back in the old days, the Colonial, it was the same thing. We used to catch a couple of horses at Saratoga now and then to run well and at big prices. But Love Beach, I like the fact that she broke her maiden two turns first out and did it from off the pace. Trevor McCarthy with the return call on the Bernardini filly, and her buyer figures not far off of some of the top numbers in the race. I certainly like her in that spot. There are two horses, I think, in here that have a chance to beat the 9-5 favorite, sharing a daughter shared account from the Grand Motion barn. One of them is Midship Lady, a midshipman filly who sat right off of a very quick pace, wore down the speed to win in breaking the maiden at 5.5, stretching to two turns. But when you look at her dam and her second dam and the pedigree, they were nothing special as far as stakes go or buyer numbers go, but they both had stamina. So if you're looking for a filly that perhaps on the dam side has some stamina here to get the distance to ground with a couple of sprints under her belt, that could be her Midship Lady. As a matter of fact, I just met one of the owners on the way into the paddock, so maybe that's a good sign there. They like her today. And number one, Rising Bella, also another one. The Striking Bella, who was kind of a stamina mare. She didn't win first-time turf two turns at Monmouth in the sorority there, but it was a good effort and probably one that she needed. I think she'll run a little bit better today at a price there in the Jeremy Road. So I'm going, I think it's an open race, really. I mean,
I agree.
Your filly, Love Beach, Midship Lady, I'm going to take a look at, and Rising Bella, take a look at her as well at a price.
Yeah, and I'll toss in Sunset Promise coming in from a stake down at Kentucky Downs, ran fifth in a field of 12, but $494,000 up for grabs.
Uh-huh.
All right, let's take a look at a Laurel Futurity. This one, the boys on the grass for a couple hundred thousand dollars, mile and a 16th. My Colonial angle, not quite as potent here because there's a number of horses coming in from Colonial, but I did land on one of those coming out of the Colonial race on August 31st, the Kitten's Joy. Doc Boy here will be the number four horse, winning as the 4-5 favorite. So I kind of tilted in that direction for Mike Stidham. But Field Pass is interesting coming out of the close-up finish and the with anticipation up at Saratoga. Irish Mias is a horse that I like in both starts up at Saratoga. Didn't get it done there, so comes in as a maiden for Grand Motion. But I have to take a look here at Irish Mias to maybe move forward. Quantico Kid coming out of a couple of races at Colonial, finished behind Doc Boy last time. I think it's a fun race. Who do you see in the Futurity?
Quantico Kid is out. He's scratched.
Okay.
I just got that scratch a little bit ago. I did kind of like him as well with the blinkers on at the price, but not a guest in this spot anymore. Number four, Field Pass is going to be my pick in here. Nothing special. Field Pass and Irish Amias, the Mega Runner and the Motion Runner. And you look at Field Pass, he beat Decorated Invader, so that's the big feather in his cap. This is his second start around that distance. Second in the, with Anticipation, a good effort to fighting CB up at the Spa. Irish Mias, second in the debut in a race that was scheduled for the turf behind another Miracle, who was next out winner, and ran okay and with the addition of Blinkers with some trouble at the Spa. No Sky Maces, Jersey Bred here could be the one as well. Those two, I mean, think you've got the right horse in Doc Boy. I don't think there'll be any big surprises in here. We're all kind of rooting for a Benny Havens to run a big race. That's trained by Anthony Aguirre Jr., the son of trainer Tony Aguirre, and Kay Marie Crydell is his mom, who is the outrider here in Maryland, very famous outrider, the one to catch Loose Horse in the Preakness. That was his first win there, that maiden $35,000, his horse. He paid $1,500 for him. It's a big step up today, but, just hoping for him to run well in this spot at a big price. Very popular family here in Maryland, Kay Marie and Tony.
The X-Man on board as well. All right, let's move out. We were talking before we went on the air. Maybe some thoughts in the Baltimore-Washington International Turf Cup Grade 3 event, a mile on the turf. There are some familiar names certainly in here. Glorious Empire for Saratoga fans off the double up there last year is certainly interesting in the seasonal debut for Jim Lawrence and Matt Shearer. But what are your thoughts in the Baltimore-Washington International Turf Cup?
Yeah, it's Glorious Empire. You're wondering about the layoff. He was training up to the Pegasus Turf Invitational and sustained a suspensory injury. So they're doing some stem cell therapy on him, and he's coming back to the races. He's responding well. This may not be his best distance at a mile, so perhaps a little bit vulnerable to lay off the 8-year-old 10-time winner. I like Caribou Club in here. I think it's going to be a rock-solid pace in this spot. And Caribou Club, Santa Anita, the downhill back in January 19, runs a big 105 buyer. It took him a little bit of time to recover from his trip in the Alcohol Sprint. Then was kind of a sign of a comeback, beaten favorite at Woodbine, and put it all together, a mountaineer in the West Virginia Speaker Cup race by winning from off the pace. And so I think he's cycling back to running toward a triple-digit buyer number here, and he'll have a solid pace in front of him. Glen Hill Farms, Caribou Club, really like him today in the Baltimore-Washington Turf Cup, one of our two graded stakes this afternoon. And this is only part one. Part two of the stakes coming up next week as well, Seth.
Ah, nice. And again, a nice stakes card with the DeFrancis Memorial, the Salima, the Laurel Futurity. Lots of nice stakes action this afternoon at Laurel. Dave, before we let you go, just catch up. Again, this is our first Saturday morning back in the studio since before Saratoga, so we haven't talked to you. You weren't at Saratoga, were you? You didn't come up there.
No, because they didn't run the Mondays. It was a little tough to make the trip up there just to come Wednesday and come back.
Yeah.
We ran kind of same kind of schedule, but what is the rumor? They may add Mondays back
next
year?
It looks like next year it's going to be Tuesday, Wednesday off. That's not certain by any means, but that seems to be where it's tilting. Next year. What was the summer like down there? And I should know this, but I don't. Do you call it Timonium?
I did Timonium, correct.
And talk a little bit about the fair, because that looks like it's a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. You know, the attendance was solid again. We had good weather. The first day was the only day with a sloppy track and off track. And it's just fun. You hardly ever need binoculars there. And we just have fun, and you spot a couple of horses at the big tee, that go on to do things. Benny Havens was one of them, who's running in today's stakes. The horse talked about earlier, the long shot Tony Aguirre Jr. He ran super solid going a half mile there, big long rangy colt, and I said, well, you know, he's going to go better stretching out to a distance to ground, and bam, on the turf, 9-1, you got on there. So. Don't overlook Timonium.
Yeah, it looks like it's a lot of fun. Isn't it, you look down towards the far turn, isn't there a Ferris wheel sitting there?
Yeah, the Ferris wheel is around the turn with a quarter of a mile left to go, right past the funnel cake stand, and before the Tilt-A-Whirl.
Yeah, very good. I got to get down there sometime. Unfortunately, it's a time of the year where it's tough for me, but it looks like a lot of fun.
It's a year-round simulcast facility, too. I think probably the most successful simulcast OTB that we have in Maryland because of its location on the second floor. They've done a nice job in there, and they have a new restaurant in there now. Nick's Fish House took over the restaurant right before, toward the end of Simonia Meats. And so I haven't been back since the Simonia Meat, but it's any time you have a big day like today with all the good racing, Saturdays they're always packed in there.
Yeah, there's nice.
Just kind of like what I call it, the DG area, the degenerate area. and then the other side is more of a restaurant-style seating with some nice, comfortable couches on the other side with a nice bar and plenty of TVs.
Yeah, nice. So there's a destination for folks. Yeah. Dave, as always, appreciate the visit. Glad we got you plugged back in here now that we're back in the studio. And that also means with the season underway, that fall-winter season at Laurel, we will talk again, certainly.
Yeah, you got a second?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wanted to mention, talk about the Colonial Downs Turf Course and giving horses a leg up. I mean, kudos to Maryland Jockey Club for doing something really good to the turf course during the Timonium break. They aerated the course down to almost a foot, like 12 inches.
Ooh.
They're letting the grass grow now instead of cutting it and trying to cut it. And I tell you what, it looks better than ever here at Laurel. The turf course, a very wide turf course with like 5-6 configurations we can run. So you may notice the times, I think, are a little slower in general, but it's just super safe. And I think we're going to get a lot of longevity out of it here at Laurel Park. So some people may look at some numbers coming out of Laurel, post-Timonium, going to other tracks, maybe down in the winter. Where the turf grows in the winter season, once we close it down and kind of overlook those horses, much as they do, perhaps the Colonial horse.
Oh, that's good info. I was looking at a graphic that's on my screen here. I've got the tracks we're going to be doing this afternoon, and yours was one of them. Currently, you're, what, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but October and November, you'll be, what, Thursday through Sunday? Is that correct?
That's correct. We'll go back to 4 days a week in November, and, of course, the Maryland Million on the way again in November.
And again, a lot of great...
I'm sorry, October.
October and November Thursdays.
Yeah. October, November, we'll go back to the fourth day.
And a lot of great turf racing. That's one of the things we like and usually goes quite late into the year as well down there at Laurel. Dave, again, appreciate...
That's to get you down here for Maryland Million. That's a big, big day.
Yeah, well, you and I were talking about a Canadian road trip, and we'd love to do a Maryland road trip sometime as well. I haven't been at Laurel in a long time. I was driving up from Florida years ago and pulled over and spent an afternoon at Laurel, which I absolutely enjoyed.
Yeah, you'll be very, very surprised at how really nice some of the improvements are up here. The second floor sports bar, we've got the big one handicapping tournament today, expecting it's a smaller tournament, but a lot of money on the line. The dining room down by the paddock, the tips has been remodeled not once but twice. Working on the box seating area.
You know what? I may have to come down for Pie Day.
Oh, that's, as a matter of fact, we are doing the pies because I did have a little conversation with our marketing department the other day, and he said, we have to go over across the street to order the pies. They order them from the Amish bakery across the street, Solfus's. There's an Amish market across the street. Very popular, and they were going to put in the order this week.
Nice.
Yeah.
But I'm not going mince. I'm going apple.
Well, we may special order you one.
Maybe I have to put that on the agenda. Dave, again, appreciate the visit. As I say, we'll talk again as the season progresses.
Okay, Seth. Have a great day.
Dave Rodman, Laurel Park, appreciate it. Yeah, they have a pie day down there where I say one of the best giveaways in all of horse racing. I mean, you know, Saratoga, you get the cap, you get the towel, and the carry, you know, those are all nice. But get a nice Amish baked pie, how can you beat that at the racetrack? You're a winner before you've made a bet down there at Laurel on Pie Day. But appreciate the visit from Dave Rodman. Also, Tim Wilkin from the Times Union, who's been covering along with Tom Law and Anthony Affronti, part of the Notes team, covering the action this week down at Parks. And Jeremy Plonk kicked things off, horseplayernow.com, and much more, just to kind of recap where we've move to in the three-year-old season through the summer, and some thoughts also on that Pennsylvania Derby this afternoon. All right, I'm going to wrap things up. Oh, before I do, let me pull up my sheet of promos here, because there are a couple of notable promos this weekend. First 3% bonus on Churchill wagers with your account. There are some restrictions. Check out the website for more information, capitalotb.com. Today is the Fan Appreciation Day at the Gloversville branch, and we would love to see you there between noon and 5. So you have about an hour to get over to 198 2nd Street, Suite Number 2. That's where the local OTB parlor is in Gloversville. Noon to 5, first 50 folks get a $2 bet voucher, giveaway item, a program. There's a contest, food and beverage. The Gloversville branch today, noon to 5. Stop by so we can say thank you to you for your patronage. And tomorrow here at the Clubhouse Racebook, it's another football Sunday. Happens throughout the NFL season. Come in and watch all the games. Watch all the racing action. If you wear a jersey, you get in for free. But if you put your name on the squares, maybe you can win a jersey as well. A lot of fun down here during the football season. Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. All right, I'm going to wrap things up. Be back in, what are we looking at? Maybe an hour and a half or so with OTB Live as we're featuring a 1 p.m. post time at Belmont. So we're back to a more normal schedule. And in fact, another reminder, we are back to a more normal schedule throughout the remainder of the Belmont meet as they changed this past week. They spent the first couple of weeks of the Belmont meet, as they said at the end of Saratoga, kind of assessing the situation. And the game plan down at Belmont, some people I've talked to over the past couple of weeks just weren't aware. They're building a hockey arena down there. So there's some construction that will be going on during the Belmont meet. And the thought was that construction may interfere a little bit with the racing, could bother the horses or whatnot. So the game plan was stop the construction at 3 o'clock, make that your post time, have an abbreviated 8-race card on weekdays, and then the regular cards on the weekend. But again, at the end of the Saratoga meet, they said, you know, the first couple of weeks we'll kind of assess the situation. They have done that now, consulted with the horsemen, and everybody decided, you know what, I think we can go to the regular 1 o'clock post time and we're fine. They're also going to keep the calendar the same for the Belmont meet. They were going to head to Aqueduct a little bit earlier. That's not going to happen now. They'll go the regular length of the Belmont meet, and starting next Wednesday, weekdays are going to go back to that 1 o'clock post time. So just keep that in mind during the next week. Things go back to normal at Belmont. But normal today with a 1 o'clock post time at Belmont. A little bit later on, also on OTB Live, we'll have that Parks card. We'll have the Laurel card, Churchill, much, much more on this afternoon's edition of OTB Live. So tune in again in about an hour and a half for that. I'm going to wrap it up. As usual, I'm late. I'm bad with the clock at the end of the show. So I'm going to wrap it up and step out back in an hour or so with OTB Live. Thanks for tuning in this morning. We'll see you in a few.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.